Most kitchen injuries happen involving a chicken. That your mahogany vibrator could actually be considered hybrid. He was stew by the time they got finished with him.
Welcome to Countless Been Organized. I am T-Fat P, the Fabulous Penguin.
And I'm Max.
In a box.
In a box. Do I always have to be Max in a box now?
Well, until you get a bigger room, I think so. And this is Countless Screaming Argonauts, the podcast of record, restating the obvious since 2007.
Yeah, we didn't really celebrate our anniversary here.
No, we didn't. It kind of just blew right by us.
Wow.
Today is December 3rd, 2009, and this is episode 115.
Wow.
I know. We're just flying along. So, Max, let me ask you this. Do you like bagels, Max?
I do, yeah.
You do like bagels? Okay. Do you know how dangerous bagels are?
No. How dangerous are bagels?
Well, according to Freakonomics, and we love the Freakonomics.
Yes, we do.
Okay. According to their blog, Americans ate 3 billion bagels at home last year.
Yeah.
That works out to be about 11 per person.
Somebody's eating more, because I don't eat that many, but go ahead.
Right. Well, I do, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And in the course of slicing up those bagels, 1,979 people cut their fingers so badly that they ended up in the emergency room. Their comment was that by the finger cut to the ER metric, that makes bagel cutting the 5th most dangerous activity in the American kitchen.
Another
so there's
list?
Four more that are worse than that.
Four more things that you can do in your kitchen more dangerous than cutting a bagel.
Right. Now, they are all knife-related, obviously.
Well, no, I wasn't going to go there, but okay.
And I'm going to give you a shot at naming any one of the...
Top four. Slicing onions.
Onions. Very, very good, but not in the top four.
What could be more dangerous?
Actually, I'm sorry. Wait a second, Max. Let me rephrase that. You are right in saying that onion is one above.
Okay. Knife-related. How about sharpening a knife?
No, that didn't make the top 7.
Which means it was number 8.
It could be number 8, but not the top 7.
Oh, it's a list of 7, huh?
Yeah.
All right. What else do people do with knives?
Well, the first would be what's the most common protein that's cut up in the kitchen?
Well, I was just going to say beef.
Chicken.
All right. So must
Unless
be cutting
Texas,
up
If you're
cutting
in
up
Texas,
chicken.
It's beef.
Yes.
But everywhere else in the United States, it's chicken.
Most kitchen injuries happen involving a chicken.
More than almost twice as many as the bagel, 3,600.
Yeah, I can see
so
that.
Chicken is first at 3,600, then comes two other things, then comes onion, and then comes bagels. The other two are potatoes and apples.
Oh, yeah, apples, sure.
Right. Now, the one that surprised me was number 6. You ready for number 6?
I'm hungry for it.
Pumpkins.
Oh, sure.
So in 1 month... Pumpkins jump all the way up to number 6 with almost 1,200 ER reported accidents related to pumpkin carving.
Wow. Yeah, pumpkins with the top and the scooping and the eyeballs and
right.
Smiley mouths so you can slip and
cut your finger.
And those are like big cuts. I imagine that those are the most dangerous, not only the most common.
Right. The two least reported cuts that made the list were wedding cakes and turnips. Each of them had less than 100 injuries reported.
Well,
turnips I can understand.
Yeah. I've personally never heard of anyone injuring themselves in any way involving a turnip.
Well, have you seen turnips recently?
This is not your father's turnip?
Right. Well, it's just to me they just look like the kind of thing that you're going to destroy yourself trying to cut.
Well, yeah, sure, but no.
I mean, we like
them.
We like our we eat a lot of squash. Butternut squash can be particularly difficult to cut.
Yeah.
But it's a walk in the park compared to what a turnip looks like.
Now I'm gonna tell you something that's gonna impress you about my company again. Or else maybe you'll think it's stupid.
Your company has an anti-turnip.
No, but we have a new knife cutting policy.
Really? You're not allowed to bring knives into the dining room or the cafeteria or whatever?
No, we're not allowed to cut anything with a box cutter, or we're not allowed to have knives or any kind of cutting implement without wearing protective glove on the hand that's not holding the knife.
Wow.
What do you call it? The stuff that they coat frying pans with.
Grease? Teflon.
Teflon. We have right. Teflon gloves. Thank
do
you.
Do they give you Teflon gloves?
They provide us with Teflon gloves in three different sizes, and we are required to put on a glove, for me it would be in my left hand, if I'm going to open a box with a box cutter.
Wow.
They are serious about safety.
I guess so. I guess we'll have to ask the Freakonomics guys to investigate that.
Yeah. Well, people hurt themselves with box cutters. They actually believe that in a building with 1,000 people working every day, that they can have no serious injuries.
Right.
We haven't got
that. That makes sense. I mean, you know.
Yeah. When they took my pocket knife away from me, I was a little annoyed. Because in the course of my job, I get spare parts, replacement parts. I'm constantly sure. opening boxes.
Right, right.
Now I've got what they call a J-hook, which has a little steel rounded nub. And I have to nub a box open. And it's annoying.
Oh, I'm sure it is. But it's safe.
There's no way you could cut yourself.
And they want you to be safe. I think it's a... Well, it's nice.
Well, yeah, they're looking out for us, but I think they're also looking out for their insurance rates.
Oh, I'm sure they are. I'm sure that's all part of the practicality of it. But the fact is if they encourage that, I mean, I think it's kind of neat.
It's a forward-thinking company, and they're definitely concerned with their margins. And I bet they do get a discount.
Oh, I'm sure. All right, on to the next topic, another interesting one. Are you familiar with the Global Language Monitor?
No.
Okay. The Global Language Monitor is an Austin, Texas-based company that documents, analyzes, and tracks trends in language the world over.
Boy, that must be a job that's speeding up lately.
I would imagine so, with particular emphasis on global English. Now, every year at this time of the year, they announce their top word,
right,
their top phrase, and their top name.
Okay.
And this year... As part of it, they listed their top 10 or 15 of each of the phrases and also went back and told us what the 2008, 2007, and 2006 award winners were. And I thought they were really, really interesting.
All right.
So here we go. You ready for the top word of 2009?
Yeah, let me guess. I'm going to say unfriend.
No, Twitter.
Oh, okay. Sure. It's interesting that it hits this year.
Yep.
The cutting edge people have been tweeting for at least a couple of years.
The top phrase? This one will make perfect sense as soon as you hear it.
I just cut myself while I was opening my rutabaga?
No. The top phrase is the king of pop.
Oh, geez.
That refers to?
Me.
Michael Jackson.
No. Oh, okay.
Yes.
I thought maybe it was me.
No. And the top name.
Like that was given to a newborn child?
No, the top name in terms of English language, I guess, meaning that it appeared the most in print or whatever. I'm not sure.
They Sarah.
Don't really say, they don't tell us what it is. That would have been my guess, but it's actually Obama.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I would have said that last year, but.
Right. Among the other words that were considered top words for this year were H1N1, stimulus, vampire. Deficit, hadron, healthcare, transparency, outrage, bonus.
Outrage, huh?
outrage as related to the large bonuses handed out to bailed out companies.
Yeah.
Foreclosure and cartel.
Huh, but not T-Bagger.
Right, no T-Bagger. The top phrases, King of Pop, Obama mania, climate change, swine flu, too large to fail,
mm-hmm.
public option, cloud computing, Mayan calendar,
yeah,
and God particle.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the top names after Barack Obama were Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Mrs. Obama, also referred to as Mobama.
I like that.
Nancy Pelosi.
It wasn't Michelle, huh?
No, it was Mobama.
Mobama.
Raul Manuel got in there at number 9.
Rahm?
Yep. So I thought that was pretty interesting. But then they listed their 2008, 7, and 6 winners.
Okay.
And that was even more interesting in regards to what the 2009 were. For example, the top words for 2008
mm-hmm.
included change and bailout.
Yeah.
The top phrases included financial tsunami, global warming, and yes, we can.
Right.
And the top names were Obama, Bush, and Michael Phelps.
Oh, sure, Michael Phelps. But not McCain.
Nope, not in the top three. They only listed top threes in these.
And Sarah is not in either one of them.
Nope. In 2007, the top word was hybrid, representing all things that are green, with surge being the number 2 word.
Hybrid means all things that are green?
Referring to all things that are green. Yeah, like in hybrid cars and hybrid whatevers.
Well, yeah, but I know what hybrid means.
Right. Yeah. It's not the same. Right.
Yeah.
Climate change was the top phrase, and Al Gore was the top name in 2007.
When did he win the Nobel Peace Prize?
Yeah, that was when.
All right. Give me
so
the
anyway,
first.
I thought it was interesting because it's kind of fun to see where our language has.
Yeah, well, it's all about popularity and driven by media. But give me the first, the top three or five names again from this year.
Okay.
And then,
the top five for this year were Twitter, Obama, H1N1, stimulus,
mm-hmm.
and vampire was the number 5 word.
And now use them in a sentence.
All of them together in one sentence? Twitter is the ability to encapsulate human thought in 140 characters.
No.
H1N1
Obama Twittered his favorite vampire about H1N1, and I forgot the rest.
And his stimulus package.
That's what I was going for, something like that.
There you go. I'm surprised that Vampire did as well as it did, better than deficit.
Are you kidding me? Have you heard the stories of that movie?
Well, no, I understand. But if Twitter, Obama, H1N1, and stimulus are top 4, then I would have expected deficit, healthcare, transparency, and possibly unemployed to be right up there. But Vampire snuck in.
Yeah. Well, there's two problems with that. Your daughter is no longer a teenager, and your daughter has a brain.
Right.
Because otherwise, you'd have been sucked into the world of Twilight, too.
Right. I guess so.
I was just – when you showed up online, I was just reading again about the secrets of the sparkle and how they go interminably without actually any plot in the story of this story. Should check out the secrets of the sparkle on QN Podcast.
All right, I might have to do that.
It's adapted from a webpage, and I can't tell you the name of the webpage right now, and it would take me a while to find it. But it's pretty amusing. The whole thing is it's presented as the Twilight shows, I'm sure I told you this before, are a metaphor for Mormonism. And by the time you get done hearing it, you might agree.
Okay. Well, listen, I got one more thing, and then I'm going to turn it over to you.
Well, I don't have a lot, but hit me.
Okay. Scientists in Holland have succeeded for the first time in growing pork in a laboratory.
There's a team that plays trivia with us sometimes on Tuesdays, and their name of their team is Pork is a Verb.
Well,
now, what were you saying?
Okay, well, these expert scientists in Holland have been able to grow pork in a petri dish.
Without the requisite pig attached?
They use some cells from a live pig, and they've been able to replicate growth.
How about, like, bone and skin and all that? Are they just...
Well, so far all they got is meat. They said that they feel that this product, which they're calling cultured meat, could reduce billions of tons of greenhouse gases emitted each year by farm animals.
You know, the irrepressible Brian of Brian's Rules of Social Dynamics was the first person I ever heard, and this has got to be at least 15 years ago, mm-hmm. or 20, because we were roommates. It was before he got married. And he had a clipping from a newspaper that he hung on the refrigerator talking about cows and how they add to greenhouse gases. Brian was way ahead of the curve on global warming.
It's true.
Yeah, so if you can have the pork without the gas.
Well, you know, now this is where I start to have problems with it. As the article continues, it says they think that this could lead to sausages and other processed products in as little as 5 years' time.
That are completely indigestible.
Right, and they feel that they could take the meat from one animal, the cells, and create a volume of meat provided by over 1 million animals.
Mm.
Now, there's two things that bother me about the next two lines.
Okay.
The first one is, so far, the scientists have not tasted it. Which, to me, would be a prerequisite for making sausage.
But once you see people making sausage, you never taste it.
Right. And the other one was so far that the scientists have only managed to develop a very soggy form of pork.
Rather like
wasted muscle tissue.
Oh.
Now, again, you know, it kind of loses its appeal when you talk about it that way.
Bioengineered flaccid pork.
There you go.
I don't know. I'm thinking I don't want this, especially if it's genetically identical cell to cell.
Right.
You know, for as far as the eye can see, it just seems like something that I don't want to put in my body.
Right.
My body is a temple, you know.
This is another reason maybe to consider not doing it.
Okay. As if I need more.
PETA, the animal rights group,
they're opposed to it.
Released a statement saying, as far as we're concerned, if the meat is not a piece of a dead animal, there's no ethical objection.
Oh, yes. Well, if PETA's in favor of it, then I'm definitely against it.
That's it. That's what I figured as much.
Yeah, that's not right.
Speaking of PETA, did you see that the picture that got them in trouble?
No. No, which one?
They put in a picture in an ad, and I don't know where it was. I didn't bring it for tonight's show, but there's an ad, and basically it says, you know, that it's okay not to believe in God, but you know, they want you to adopt an animal rather than, you know, rather
eat
than,
an animal.
Right, you know, kind of thing. And the model is naked with angel wings.
Yeah.
And she's holding a cross.
Mm-hmm.
And the three main points of the cross cover three
main points of the anatomy.
Right.
Yeah.
And the Catholic Church objected to that. And I
well.
I thought it was kind of funny myself.
I don't know. I think I object to the whole thing. But speaking of pork. Did you happen to catch Mythbusters yesterday?
No, I did not. What was on Mythbusters?
They had a myth about pressurized diving suits. And the theory that if you remove the pressure from a diving suit, that all of the meat of a human being would go into the helmet.
Okay.
And first they did a little mock-up. They took a gelatin guy like they're used to creating, a little miniature doll kind of a character, and put him in a little miniature helmet with a pressurized suit. And they put him in a swimming pool 15 feet down. And they took the air away. The whole thing went up into the helmet. So then, proof of concept accomplished. They took an artificial skeleton, not a human skeleton, a plastic one, and they wrapped it in meat, in pork in particular, and they stitched it all together, and then for some reason they unstitched the chest cavity and added organs, liver and things like that.
Right.
And they put it in a diving suit with a real honest-to-God diving helmet, and they sent it down below the water 300 feet. And they took the pressurized air away from the inside of the suit, and it went squish right up into the helmet. It was disgusting. And it didn't just, like, you know, push the head. They had, a dummy head on the thing. Right. I don't know what it was made out of.
The whole thing.
But all of the organs, and it – it like osterized it, it juicerized the stuff, and then this was the best part, and they didn't even talk about it. It crushed the helmet, the diving helmet, and a little puff of red corpuscles or something came sifting through the cracks in the helmet. It was absolutely, completely confirmed. It was gross as hell and really a lot of fun.
Oh man, that is really.
And they called him. They called him Meat Man.
Of course. What else would you call him?
He was stew by the time they got finished with him. Now I'm
very
guessing
good. That was a good pun.
I'm guessing that PETA would be opposed to that.
I would guess so. Yeah.
But if you like MythBusters, you got to check out the Meat Man episode. I told you what happened, but it was worth retelling just because it was so gross.
Maybe when I write up my little write-up for the blog, I'll make a notice of the fact that there's a spoiler, a MythBusters spoiler.
MythBusters spoiler.
About Meat Man.
Mything meat. It was very cool.
It sounds it.
All right. I've got one back to nature.
Okay.
Paragraph here.
And I got a closer about brohood.
All right. For some consumers, good environmental citizenship is important, even when choosing, among sex accessories. No longer will they tolerate plastic personal vibrators made with the softeners called phthalates, I'm not sure how to say that,
right,
or body lubricants that contain toxic chemicals, typically found in, say, antifreeze or leather restraints from slaughtered cattle. So this is another thing that PETA would be against. In an October issue, Time magazine described a market of organic lubricants, biodegradable whips and handcuffs, vegan condoms, which was my favorite thing in this. Who's eating condoms?
That's interesting, yeah.
And
well, I'm sure that that's in contrast to the lamb intestines or the –
oh, yeah, okay.
Whatever kind. So, but that's right. Still bizarre.
I didn't pick that up, but you're right. Glass and or mahogany vibrators, even hand crankable models, eliminating
isn't mahogany an endangered species? Why would you want to use that? Glass I can understand. But.
Well, it's biodegradable though.
Oh, okay. So if you use it like a million times, is what you're saying?
Right. When you die of old age and your house falls down around you.
Right.
You're safe to know your vibrator will someday go back to the earth.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Even handheld crankable models with no need for batteries. Some Catholic Church officials have also embraced the concept to further denounce chemical and latex birth controls, recharacterizing the traditional rhythm method, family planning, as, get this, back to nature detection of ovulation via body signals.
Talk about your oxymorons, huh?
Back to nature detection. You're pregnant, by God. You were
right?
Fertile. Anyway, that's what I got.
It's all that hybrid stuff. Back to the greening.
Yeah, I didn't realize that your mahogany vibrator could actually be considered hybrid.
Right. Pretty soon they'll have, lubricants that can be used, to fry chicken or something.
Well, yes, but they wouldn't be PETA friendly.
Right.
Not to mention that they'd be dangerous in the kitchen.
They could.
Did you notice how I tied things all up together?
I did. Very, very good. Good job.
Thank you very much. What do you got?
Well, last thing. I read this blog about by this woman who's an amputee.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it because I just find it fascinating for her to be talking about you know, the different kinds of things that she's experienced, because a lot of them are really different from the sorts of things that I've experienced.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, she talks a lot about how she hears people saying weird things in the store and stuff, and I've never run across that.
Yeah.
For an example. But anyway, she's, you know, she's a wife and a mother, and they've got a 3 or 3.5 year old kid.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, in the blog recently, she was talking about going to the store and running into another amputee and how excited her little 3-year-old was because he saw somebody else with a little leg is how he described it.
Right.
But in her talking about this thing, she said, and this is a quote, "There's an unspoken respect among amputees. We typically exchange the discreet knowing nod and continue without interacting."
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was pretty interesting.
Well, and I expect that's true of any member of any group who sees somebody from their group who is a stranger.
Right. Well, that got me thinking. And while I'm thinking about this, I looked at Reddit, and Reddit had a whole thing about the question was, if you're riding in a car or a motorcycle and you see a cop, do you warn oncoming drivers, and how do you do it?
Oh, yeah, I do.
I do all the time. And what they were talking about were they call them brohood signs.
Flashing your headlights.
It's the brotherhood of truck drivers, the brotherhood of motorcycle riders, the brotherhood of cop warners.
Uh-huh.
And they were saying, you know, how the most common one was flashing the lights on your car or a twirling finger when you're riding your motorcycle, and like the light on the top of a cop car.
Uh-huh.
And so I figured, you put those two together and the knowing nod of amputees, and you got these whole characteristics, a whole group of these secret signs, these brohood signs. It just made me feel like breaking out in the old Pepsi, "I want the world to sing and live in harmony" kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
You know?
That's the positive spin on it.
Right.
The negative spin on it is it's like gang signs.
It could very, very well. Yeah, sure. I hadn't even thought of that. That's a good one.
But there's a lot of brohood signs, you know, in Compton and wherever else, growing increasingly, you know, across the country. Where,
right. Well, I think we may have to come up with a brohood sign for the Countless Screaming Argonauts.
Wow.
I'm not sure what it would be. Perhaps
what would
the
it be?
The motion of drinking a beer?
Yeah, that's a good possibility. Maybe we should ask our listeners.
If anybody has any ideas, I'd love to hear them.
Right
what
in.
Would be the, what would be the CSA brohood sign?
Yeah, let us know, because we need a brohood sign.
We do.
So all those thousands of people that are out there secretly listening in their cars and in their living rooms and wrinkling in the bathroom, in the bathtub, while their stereo is on iTunes – in the living
listen
room.
To us on our iPods. Their
right.
iPods, right?
Right, yeah.
You got to come up with a sign. Because, I mean, look, let's be realistic. We got a website.
Yeah.
We've got mugs and all that other kind of product.
Right.
We got mottos.
We do. We have plenty of mottos. I think it's time for another motto, but we've got a few.
We've got a few mottos. And now it only makes sense that we would come up with the brohood, the sign.
I think.
The sign of the brotherhood of the Countless Screaming Argonauts listeners.
Yeah. So send your cards and letters to penguin@brohood.com. No, I don't know. There probably is a brohood.com. I'll have to go check it out.
Okay.
But
well,
yeah.
On that note, I think that we should just let people know that they can find us on iTunes.
Right.
They can find us on Blogspot at csapodcast.blogspot.com.
Right.
And
they can vote for us on Podcast Alley. It's a new month. The votes count again.
Right. And they can write to us at csapodcast@gmail.com.
Right.
Or they could buy our stuff at Cafe Press.
That's right. Make us famous.
There you go.
Or you could just, you know, yell out when you're on the street, because probably there's another CSA listener right next to you.
And you know what? To add another thing, they can follow us on Twitter. CSA Podcast does tweet.
We tweet.
About all the interesting things that are going on, including the fact that we have another batch of Blue Canary Cream Ale in the closet.
Oh, stop.
We do.
Oh, I know. I just am not going to get any, so.
Well, no, we're going to definitely save
Yeah, yeah. I've heard this song before.
Well, I told you, I thought drank the last one, and then we found two more, three more, actually.
Is that right? You mean when I was up there, and you were telling me that she drank the last one, there were more left?
There were actually three more, but we didn't find that out until we were getting ready to make another batch, and we went through the bottles, and we came across the box and had three more in it. We didn't know that they were there. But by
this
that time,
news to me. This is very disappointing news.
By that time, they were already, that beer was already 3 months old.
Is that?
And it hadn't been refrigerated.
Oh.
And so, I mean, we drank it.
But it was incredibly alcoholic. And
It was probably, you know, if I think that our first batch was about a 10.
On a scale of 1 to 10, or you mean?
On a scale of 1 to 10, let's give it a 9.
Okay.
And it had degraded to about a 7.5. But it was still good, and we had actually some friends over at Thanksgiving, and they tasted it.
Yeah.
Just because they had never tasted homemade beer. And they gave us the thumbs up. They liked it, even though it was, like I said, old. But we have a fresh batch, and at the very, very least, Max, we'll have College Boy bring a couple of bottles back with him. Stop,
buy with him.
Drop them off.
You know what? If he brings them to Ithaca, I'll go get them.
Okay. All right.
Because here I am, disparaging Mrs. Fat P, and it's not even her fault.
Right. I think he drives right through.
Well, he could certainly stop by. He'd be welcome.
So we'll figure that out, but you'll definitely get get some of the second batch if it's up to standard.
That would be outstanding. Now, he's not home right now, is he?
No, he's back at school for 2 more weeks.
And then back home for some more Blue Canary Cream Ale.
Yep.
I like it. It's beginning to flow, that name.
Yeah, I like that name. Yep. I like it a lot. But we'll have to have a discussion. Maybe we can do a chronicle about the fact that if you make it, the beer, a second time,
yeah,
it's a different yeast.
And it's got to have a different name, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know. That's the question. It's the same recipe. It's just a different yeast.
Oh.
So that will be the point of discussion.
Oh. Yeah, I could say, yeah.
You know, because they refer to it in the same way.
Well, you know,
like, for example, it's called, when you buy the recipe, there is, it's called like ABC Cream Ale.
Yeah.
And then they say it comes with this yeast, or it comes with this yeast, it's a different one,
mm-hmm.
or it comes with this yeast, it's a different one, or it comes with this, what they call pitchable yeast, which is in liquid form.
Mm.
But it's always referred to as ABC Cream Ale. So,
that's the question. Is it the malt? Is it the barley? Is it the hops?
Right. Everything else would be the same. The barley, the hops are all the same. The water is the same.
This gets us to a brightly clear philosophical question, and that is, what is it that makes the beer the beer?
Right. Well, you can't step into the same river twice, so I don't think you can, you know, you can't make the same beer twice.
Yeah. I've known other people that made beers, and they always named the next batch something else.
Right.
But if the recipe
I think it's a topic for a chronicle, and I think we should pick it up there.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Max. It's a lot of fun.
Yep. Which stood on rocky shores and kept the speeches shipwrecked. Okay. Have a good night. Though I respect that a lot, I'd be fired if that were my job. After killing Jason off and countless screaming.